Where are you from? No, where are you really from? It's a question constantly asked to people of colour. And you know what? It really doesn't matter because you're not entitled to their family history. In the new play Going Down, produced by Malthouse Theatre and Sydney Theatre Company, our heroine Natalie Yang is going to let where her parents come from dictate what she writes about. Joining us now is the mastermind behind the play, award-winning playwright Michelle Lee. Good morning.
G'day, Sophie. How are you going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
But first of all, congratulations. It's your first full-length play and it's just had its world premiere.
Yeah. I'm super stoked. Yeah, so I'm based in Melbourne, but with my partner I and Bob were up in Sydney. So got to see opening night and it was fantastic.
How's the reception been so far?
Oh, yeah, really good from people in the audiences. I just read a couple of reviews and I reckon like they're a little bit middle of the road. But at the same time, I enjoy reading all the reviews and seeing what people are bringing to it and how it's meeting their expectations and how it's not. But I mean, I'm really pleased with how it's come together and with the team. And it's been a couple of years in the making with intensive developments here and there. But yeah, for me, it's really it's meeting what I want the piece to be doing.
Mm. So can you tell us a bit more about what the play is about?
So in terms of the plot, so it's set over a weekend and our protagonist, Natalie Yang, who's based on a version of me, she's just having a pretty shit time with the reception to her memoir, Banana Girl. And over the course of the weekend, things just progressively get worse and worse. And it's all centred around the reception to the book, which is then also centred around questions about her cultural identity. So her being based on me, she's of Hmong background, but born and raised in Australia. Mm. But, I mean, thematically, there's questions around identity, intersectionality, what audiences want from people of colour and women of colour. And also the challenges being an artist, a writer, and the play set in Melbourne, and it's a real like ode to Melbourne, but also a bit of a fun poke at Melbourne as well.
I mean, Banana Girl, the memoir that she's written, it's quite sexually explicit. How does that kind of like lead into it, and like with her, does that, with her culture and what people expect of her, how does she kind of navigate that?
Well, I guess being an openly sexual Asian female in some ways can be like she's the worst kind of daughter or representative of her community in some ways, because she's anti the model migrant character, and she's quite individualistic, which also is quite in opposition to the family values that we associate with Asian families and Eastern cultures. So, I mean, the fact that the book is quite sexual and that's a kind of political stance is all about kind of living in opposition and tension between her family background and contemporary Australia and contemporary Melbourne.
I love it's also called Banana Girl. I mean, it's a bit of a contentious term. In my family, it's like, oh, it's good. It's a very big insult. And sometimes when I was younger, I was like, oh, yeah, I'm a banana. But how do you feel about the term?
Oh, I'm really comfortable with it. But I think maybe it's because it's language that perhaps I'm reclaiming in a certain way. And also I'm being a bit cheeky about it. And I think it's just a bit of a shorthand to describe the sense of kind of being in between things and having internalized a sense of racism, colonialism. I mean, I think now that I'm in my 30s, when I was in my teens and in my 20s, earlier 20s, I should say, I felt like deeply uncomfortable with otherness. Mm. And that desire that I think is quite common to second-generation migrants, a sense of wanting to assimilate, because of course Australia is largely multicultural, but then I think it's kind of changing now, but certainly when I was growing up, multiculturalism was, it's kind of a bit superficial, maybe government policy, kind of bureaucratic, but lived experience didn't feel very multicultural. I felt very aware of my otherness, and of course, as a reaction to that, wanted to fit in. So I think that term banana kind of encapsulates that tension for me. But yeah, I get it too, because in some ways, the contention around it is that it suggests there's a hierarchy that's being bought into.
Mm.
So, I mean, and yet it's messy because it's all those things. It's about not wanting to fit into a mold about what Asian Australian people are like, but also not wanting to be erased of your culture, not wanting to be seen only as someone who's assimilated successfully.
Yeah. So the tagline is Sex and the Millennial City. What kind of millennial issues is our protagonist facing?
It's funny because she's actually, I think she's kind of aged down in the production, which it probably makes sense. I mean, she's supposed to be like just hit 30, but I think she'd be read as maybe late 20s. Her nemesis is in her early 20s and is like, 100 times more successful than Natalie, 100 times more Asian. But she's a hipster. She's unashamedly a hipster, but not entirely in just in the sense of just, her fashion and consumption choices, but in the sense of, being very politically engaged, being quite self-assured in some ways. So because she's an artist, she's also grappled with a huge amount of self-doubt because, in this day and age, being an artist is also about how you're received. And if you're not received as favorably, then you internalize that, into your sense of self-worth. So she's in some ways has the hallmarks of a cliched of an inner city millennial, but then she's more than that.
Yeah. Also, being an artist in a Asian family, how is that received in her family?
Oh, well, the layers of family and the characters. I mean, the main character who is from Natalie's family is her mother, but she's peripheral. And I mean, that's kind of saying something about my own personal experience about my relationship with family. I don't live close to my family. I'm not super close to my family, and not all my family members really get or participate in my artistic practice. So I would say the fact that family are a bit absent and they don't really make an appearance in the play towards the end, I think that's kind of indicative of their relationship to Natalie. And she's probably, without saying it in the play, a little bit of not black sheep, but a bit of the odd one out. She's not with her family physically and in some ways figuratively as well.
Yeah. You mentioned her rival before, who's in her 20s, very successful, she kind of writes about culture and family. Is like one of the comments in the play, like, she is successful because she writes what people expected her to write about?
Yeah. She conforms to the idea of what we, using the kind of collective we, want of a person of colour, particularly of Asian people, someone who fits into multicultural Australia, but in that kind of narrow sense of a multicultural Australia. She's very connected to her family. She's kind of, a spokesperson in a sense for her family and then her community as well. She's Indonesian Chinese. She's kind of the opposite of Natalie and is successful because she tells the story that we want to hear. It's a story of adversity. It's a story of you coming from a place that's less democratic, has human rights abuses, and ending up in Australia and fitting in, which I think kind of reaffirms the collective Australia, a sense of Australia being, the lucky country, a place where everyone has a fair go. And I'm using these terms, in inverted commas, because I think when the migrant narrative fits into, the broader narrative of egalitarianism in Australia, it kind of helps us avoid other realities of our own human rights abuses. So I think that the things are intertwined. You know, the successful migrant coming from a place of tragedy into Australia and succeeding, I think it's intertwined with Australia's sense of self-image and its own kind of self-delusions and its own kind of big lies.
Mm. Well, we are definitely a delusional country. But so just to finish off, what do you want people to kind of take out of this play when they go see it?
Oh, I want them to have a fun time. I want them to kind of give props to the performers. I mean, the ensemble is just great. But also I want them to have a chat afterwards and, talk about, what's working for them and what's not and, what's funny and then what's not funny and what are the themes that I'm exploring. And it's okay, like, if it doesn't really hit all the marks for them, because I think most playwrights would say it's not really entirely about what happens in the room. It's also about what stays with you, what you debate, what you're reading online, and how it might settle in 2 weeks later, a month later. Mm-hmm. And also, I think, maybe more specifically, in those kind of, in the aftermath of the experience in the show, I want people to, be thinking about, what is this collective Australia and kind of where are we? And can we kind of like move beyond the idea of people of colour outside of just family narratives or connections with exotic, tasty food? I mean, those things are, I mean, that's stuff I love as well, but it's more than that. And now that, particularly Southeast Asian people have been in Australia for, I don't know, it's probably going on to 3-4 generations, we just are by circumstance, we're intersectional. We are our parents' culture, that's our culture too, but we're also in Australian culture at this point in time with its own problems and realities. And it's messy. I mean, the play offers, a few kind of resolutions, but that's just one version of one person's moment in time grappling with their own identity.
Well, thank you so much for chatting to us today, Michelle, and thank you for bringing more contemporary Asian Australian stories to the stage and screen. I love it. As an Asian myself, it's just nice to see yourself reflected here and there.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy it.